folks, it's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about the crucial political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the challenges facing everyone. Good morning, folks. Steve Williamson here. The whole crew is here today, and you're going to hear from some of our people involved in Democratic Perspective that don't normally talk, right, Mike?
That's right. This is our annual kind of look back show, look back at 2019 show, and we kind of do this every year, and we invite the people that support us to on the air.
The thing is that we do this differently because we've got 45 minutes. We don't try to sump the whole year, Mike. And we let each speaker kind of focus on an issue. And we've done it about 5 or 10 different ways. We're all discussing the same issue to everybody talking about something different. And we've done this for decades. We're a weekly show. We can't keep up with it.
8 years anyway.
And almost a decade. Well,
there you go.
It'll be 8 years in April.
Accuracy is important.
Eight years in April. You're right, Mike. You're right. You're right. So that's what we're going to do. We're going to talk about the year. One of the most significant and important years, I think, in American history. We have a president who's the only third person president in American history to be impeached. He's a man who I think is the worst sociopathic demagogue we've ever had, and he's president of the United States. He's not off on some radio program like us. All right. Yeah. So let's start with Kat. Kat, introduce yourself. And Kat's an activist, well known in the area. You work all over the area, and your focus, you have a lot of different focuses politically. You're really a hardcore, be there type, show up at the demonstration type activist, aren't you? But your main focus now is you're the manager, really, of the Dirty Money campaign in our area.
Well, I'm the ambassador for the Verde Valley in Sedona.
Tell us a little bit about the Dirty Money campaign.
Sure. This is the third time we've tried to get this initiative going. We're trying to get an amendment to the Arizona Constitution that would say that voters have a right to know where large sums of money are coming from to influence voters.
That's a shock.
And this is a nonpartisan issue, so we have an awful lot of people on board with this. This was started by Terry Goddard. A lot of the listeners know, I'm sure, who he was. He was our attorney general for a couple of terms and also mayor of Phoenix, a Democrat, and also Tom Horn, who was also an attorney general for Arizona and is a Republican and an independent. So this is absolutely nonpartisan. It affects everyone.
And dirty money, is that the same thing as what normally we call dark money?
Sure. It's that, you know, you can't see it. You don't know where where the original source is for the money.
Can you have a democracy, Kat, do you think, if the massive amounts of money are flowing into the system that are hidden about where they come from, the motives of the people, their economic interests, it's all of that's hidden, and that's what you're trying to reform?
Absolutely. No, you can't have a democracy when you've got people buying votes is really what they're doing. You know, it's like what happened with APS a few years back, where they put in $10.7 million into campaigning against certain corporate commissioners for Arizona that wanted renewable resources and, you know, solar and wind, so that they were able to get buy their way in by influencing the voters so that the corporate commission then follows what APS wants, not what the voters want.
Mike and I kept inviting APS to come on the show and deny that they did this, but they never showed up. And we didn't get angry things from their lawyers either, so they must have been confident. What are the details of this amendment that you're trying to get passed?
Okay, well, the details are we are going for 500,000 signatures. And we need, 300-something thousand, but we need to have a cushion. And every time we have an election, we get, when we have an amendment, the number of signatures is determined by how many people turn out to vote. So it's a percentage of the state of voters that we need. And the details would be that there would be Clean Elections Commission would be overseeing this if we do vote it in 2020, to oversee that people would have to disclose, people and corporations would have to disclose the original source of where the money comes from.
How much? If they give $500, do they have to disclose it?
$5,000 for local or state elections, and it's just what we're doing is we're not saying that it would be illegal for people to do it, but they would just have to tell us who they are. There has to be transparency.
So it's fairly large sums of money that you're
aiming. It's
not
ordinary
contributions.
No, this is substantial amounts that are doing attack ads on television and billboards and that sort of thing, corporations and individuals.
How many signatures do you need, and how many signatures as a cushion? Because Mike and I had Terry Goddard on the last time. He had a ton more signatures than he seemed to, and yet they got denied when they went to get the
right. And the reason for that denial was because we had paid signature gatherers from out of state that work for companies that do that, and they were the Koch brothers intervened and tried to sue us and bring us to court. And what they did is claim that they sent subpoenas. They were putting out subpoenas for these paid petitioners, but by the time we got them, the office was long closed, and the paid petitioners were back home wherever they were, Indiana, California, wherever. And so what the courts did is they threw out all of the signatures that were gathered by all of the paid petitioners, which was roughly half.
Wow. So that's how it didn't get through, because I remember, Mike, when Terry Goddard called us, and he was just overjoyed that he had gotten enough signatures. So how many signatures do you need, and what kind of a cushion do you need this time?
Well, I said earlier, it's 360-something thousand, but we're going for 500,000, you know, so we have a cushion. And, of course, that means there'll be people that will be signing that maybe have signed more than once and didn't know it, or their voter registration doesn't match up with their address, or they're not registered to vote.
Do you have any paid petitioners this time around?
Well, we didn't start out with it, but we did start doing it a few weeks ago. But we're taking local people from Arizona, so that if we do get taken to court, they can be there.
Why did you guys decide on the term dirty money?
Well, dirty, dark, it's the same idea as, I like the idea. Well, first off, it has such ugly connotations, you know. It's so negative by saying dirty, you know, like you dirty liar. You,
got it.
You, it also has sort of a Wild West feel to it to me, and so does our
the
logo. You mm-hmm. know that is literally, you know, a dirty looking logo that you want to wipe the dirt off.
Why did you pick this issue? Because I know you're active in a whole lot of issues, peace, women's issues,
right.
Democratic Party organizing. Why did you make this your central issue? What's motivating? Why is this your focus?
Let me think if I can remember how I started, because I've been doing it for a couple of years. Largely the problems that we have politically have to do with money. I don't know when it started, but it seemed to be that now all of our elections are all geared about who wins, who has the most money, or the people that win, and I it seems like it's the root cause to me.
So what we're going to do, folks, is everybody has 5 minutes to do to bring an issue like Kat has, and then at the end of these, everybody bringing their issue forward, we're going to have a general discussion. Gary, are you there? Gary, are you there?
Hello. Yeah.
Hello, Gary.
Yes.
Hi. Yes, you're on. What is your focus? Kat just talked about the big campaign against dirty money in Arizona, of which she's an ambassador to our area. What do you want to focus on in your talk today?
Well, my focus is, despite all of the major events that happened in 2019, the impeachment and numerous disasters, I think 2019 will be remembered more by what didn't happen than what did. I use the example of the GOP-controlled Senate refusing to vote on more than 400 House-passed bills. About 200 of those were bipartisan bills that came out of the House, but McConnell refused to give them a vote. I'd say perhaps the biggest non-event of the year was the administration's continued ignorance of the the greatest threats of our time, the climate crisis, the mass extinction of planet species, the job losses that are coming from automation. It seems that not only did they not address them and completely ignore them, but they did things that actually made them worse. And I think looking back and from 20 years from now or 50 years from now, I think that will be one of the biggest things to remember this time period for.
You mean when hundreds of thousands are dying and we could have done something about it now, and the administration
exactly.
is more focused on golf? Yeah, that might be a problem.
I think it's more focused on fossil yeah. fuels, right?
Yeah, they've taken away the incentives for sustainable energy. They've relaxed fuel standards for vehicles. They've expanded oil drilling. Took us out of the Paris Agreement. So almost everything they've done is, in regard to jobs, they've started a trade war with China. So almost everything they've done has made things worse for the future. Another thing I'd point out that didn't happen is the administration didn't spend the $18 billion authorized by Congress for reconstruction of Puerto Rico following Hurricane Maria. So American citizens in Puerto Rico are still suffering from the hurricane. Thanks to the Trump tax cuts, the federal government collected no income taxes from 91 of the Fortune 500 companies. There was no real effort by the administration or Congress to reduce deficits and the national debt that's now more than $23 trillion. There were no significant change in workers' wages despite the run-ups in the stock markets. There was no change in income inequality, wealth inequality, or opportunity inequality. So the gap between the wealthy and ordinary Americans continues to widen, and actually it seems to be accelerating. So there are just dozens and dozens of things that didn't happen. Another is Trump didn't get his Nobel Peace Prize for peace with North Korea. Instead, North Korea now is working on missiles that can reach our shores, and at the same time, Trump removed the U.S. from the ABM treaty with Russia that was designed to limit short and intermediate nuclear weapons. So it's just, I could list probably 20, 30, 40 things that weren't done that should have been done in 2019, and actually, as I said, that the administration actually did things to make them worse rather than make them better.
The clock is ticking on climate change. I think most scientists would say, is that what you think was the most significant thing that they didn't do anything about, or is it something else, Gary?
I think that's absolutely it. I think, you know, people like me have been screaming about the need to address climate change for 20 years or longer. And it's an opportunity to, you know, in addressing it, to actually create high-paying jobs, to build our infrastructure. But, you know, instead, you know, people tend to call it a hoax. I wonder if the people in Australia now think it's a hoax. I know the prime minister does, but you know, virtually the entire continent of Australia is on fire.
They're paying a very high price, right, Gary? Are we going to think he's? Do you think we'll see that dramatic things happening in the rest of the world and in the U.S.?
I think I hope it doesn't get that bad, but I'm not optimistic if something isn't done quick. Every year the scientists come out with a report and a worst case scenario of what could happen if we don't address it, and every year the changes to our climate surpass their worst case scenarios. So it's I don't think we have a lot of time left. I think we've got maybe a decade left to get serious about, I mean, really serious about addressing it. And I don't see it happening in the rest of the Trump administration. And if he's reelected, I think it may be game over.
Stay on the line, Gary, and join the general discussion toward the end of the show. Klaus, what is your focus today?
Yeah, I've decided to focus on foreign policy because that's always been my interest. So let me run through it relatively quickly in 5 minutes. The U.S. really doesn't have a consistent foreign policy. It's a succession of erratic and often contradictory moves emerging from Scott and his vanity with no recognizable strategy or purpose. He's said that his gut is much more clairvoyant than the diplomatic corps, lots of whom incidentally have resigned and been either replaced with Trump loyalists with little or no experience, or the positions have just been left open. So what was once one of the most highly respected diplomatic corps in the world has largely vanished. The year started with Trump's betrayal of our Turkish allies, the Kurdish allies, who had been instrumental in defeating ISIS, and then he suddenly decided to withdraw the American troops from that area, who had been protecting the Kurds from the
Turkey.
From Turkey, thanks. From the Turkish army, and let the Turkish army in to annihilate them. The Turks, of course, have hated hated the Kurds forever. The story tops off with Mattis resigning as defense secretary in protest. And then, and this is the most ridiculous part, a letter from Trump to Erdogan in which he says, don't be a tough guy, don't be a fool, allegedly trying to discourage him from wiping out the Kurds. And reportedly, Erdogan threw this in the wastebasket the moment he saw it.
Particularly childish, right?
Oh, my God.
Can't even express it.
I know. It's like fifth grade. No, fifth grade would do better. The other thing that happened that is also humorous, if it weren't so serious, is that the bromance with Kim Jong-un of North Korea fell apart. No surprise to any political observer other than Trump. Trump had praised him and his personal relationship for years, and the North Korea just recently announced a new weapon system, which we think is possibly an intercontinental ballistic missile. So much for the art of the deal. Trump admires autocrats. I mean, he's tried unsuccessfully, fortunately, because the Congress wouldn't go along to lift the sanctions on Russia, Saudi Arabia, and Turkey. Another one of the bizarre events that happened is that Trump had four separate meetings with Putin with no aides present, just the two and an interpreter, which is highly unusual. Usually there's a coterie of aides who whispers in his ear and passes him notes, but this is just the two of them. And Trump reportedly destroyed the interpreter's notes and told her never to breathe a word. I have always suspected that Trump is a Russian asset and Putin is handler in espionage terms, as witnessed by Russia's election support, Trump's attempt to cancel the sanctions on Russia, trying to include Russia in the G7, and his support for the Crimea annexation, and recent reports that the Deutsche Bank loans he received had been backed by a Russian bank. That's an interesting subject in of its own, because no American bank would even come close to touching Trump, and Deutsche Bank just poured out money and loans to him, and nobody could understand why, and the explanation may be, in fact, that they were guaranteed by a Russian bank. And then there's a whole series of events involving in Ukraine, which I won't cover because Steve is going to cover that. Turning to Afghanistan, the Russians spent 8 years in Afghanistan and it bankrupted their country. The U.S. now has spent twice as long with no visible accomplished than billions of wasted money that could have been much better spent on hospitals and schools. Trump, you may remember, campaigned to get us out of the wars in the Middle East. Yet he's a strong supporter of the Saudi regime and refuses to acknowledge the sadistic murder of a correspondent for the Washington Post and the human tragedy that Saudi Arabia is perpetuating in Yemen. In the meantime, another amusing side note, the Palestinian and Israeli conflict keeps going. Trump's absolute support of Netanyahu and the annexation of Arab lands has intensified our enemies. And the most laughable was yet another stillborn peace treaty attempt, I don't know what number that is, headed by no other than the famed diplomat Jared Kushner.
Thanks, Klaus. Go on for a couple of minutes and we'll go on to Mike.
Right. NAFTA was canceled and replaced with another version of NAFTA, and he made it sound like a success. There's the back and forth of tariffs with China. Nobody knows how that's going to end, but every economist will tell you that there are no winners in tariff wars. And then Trump has this myopic obsession with Iran. He canceled our participation in the nuclear agreement and set stiff sanctions. And then a few days ago, he killed one of their favorite generals, whom both Bush and Obama could have killed. They decided that the flashback that would be too severe and didn't do it. So I'm puzzled how that assassination attempt could help Trump in an election year, starting possibly a new war. The Iranians are not going to take it lightly. One final comment is that after the Iranians shot down a U.S. drone, Trump ordered a bombing campaign and then Iran and then changed his mind and had the bombers recalled 10 minutes before they reached their target. Does anybody make sense of this? I sure as hell can't.
Well, maybe Mike can make sense of it. We've been doing the show now, Mike, for almost 8 years, and we've been trying to make sense of politics, the two of us, for all that time.
You want me to expect, well, politics is one thing. A mentally ill sociopath in leadership in the most powerful position of the world. How the American GOP has enabled this crazy person. This is right out of the movies. This is Wag the Dog. This is Idiocracy. I'm stammering in my. You want me?
You're right on.
I can't explain it.
He might be more technical in his mental illness, but generally, yeah, you're right.
This is a sick boy. This is a sick person that should not be kowtowed to. He should be corralled. He should be limited, and he should be removed from office as soon as possible. Why we are sitting here? Why we are not at the Capitol Mall with about a million or two or three of million other Americans. I have no idea. Am I on the radio today calling for revolution? No, but I certainly am calling for a reaction to this crazy man who's going to get and is getting lots of people killed. He got our allies killed. I've read a terrible story the other day about a man who fought in Afghanistan and abandoning our allies, the Kurds. So you have this guy did several deployments, but the one thing he had was that he did good work over there. He helped out people that needed help. He helped out the Kurds. And then he gets up one morning and reads where we have turned our back on these allies that he lived, ate, and fought with for a year. And his PTSD has been exacerbated. It's a terrible, terrible story. It's a terrible thing when the United States is led by a maniac that can't be trusted. We're talking about abandoning allies where nobody trusts us. We are alone in the world on so many issues. And then this most recent one, the analysis will be coming in for a while now. But as Klaus said, the overriding the diplomatic corps, the veteran diplomats, the people who have been doing this for years, as he said, one of the most respected in the world that Trump ignores. I'm going to change subjects completely and go to local issues here.
Got 5 minutes.
We have no. Thank you. It could be anything. We have no. I'm going to talk about.
Your laundry doing?
I'm talking about the chapel fires. And I'm going to talk about Martha McSally.
What happened with that, Mike? I was out of.
Well,
out
that's,
of state.
That's still out too. There was suspicious, and that's the other thing I want to be careful of. I'm on the. I'm not saying that there's any environmental terrorism going on in the Chapel area, but certainly it is one of the hot spots for Airbnbs. That the construction, one of the houses under construction, was a fire. There's no investigations either by the police, at least announced by the police or by the fire department. And there was some construction place fires in the chapel area, which to me smells of environmental terrorism. That this is an area that was so against the Airbnb, going back to SB's Senate Bill 1370 that allowed that forbid Sedona and other towns from limiting use. Rentals of Airbnbs. The chapel area was kind of leading this area, our town, in the resistance and the confusion of why Governor Ducey would not allow local governments to restrict rentals of Airbnbs. So they're building 6,000 and 7,000 square foot homes for the express purpose that are classed as single family residences when the permits are pulled from the Sedona the place is going to be an Airbnb, even though Sedona has to treat it as a single family home because of the 2016 decision by Governor Ducey. So then that's where some of the we're seeing some maybe some blowback. I have to admit, if it was, it's certainly an interesting case. If it was, if it's just coincidence, then it's a coincidence.
We've interviewed the folks, right, Mike, that are politically opposed to the giant Airbnb in the area. But this is something different that has happened, right?
Well, exactly. I did talk to one of them, and he has no information. One of them also, but he had every photo credit in the local print media for the pictures of the fires. I thought was interesting. He provided the pictures of the fires to local media, and they ran them. And if I was an investigator, certainly these are some of the things I would look at. On the other hand, whose side are we on here? Well, we don't want to destroy property, but certainly people having their neighborhood, they would consider torn apart, irrevocably changed by having many hotels all over the place. They feel like they've lost a voice, and they feel like they've lost control. They have no recourse with the city. Their recourse is with the state. Their state representatives and the governor. That remains the same as far as when our guy came here, he had no, he didn't even know about it the first time. He talked about, we're talking about, our representative, the CD4, guy. good old what's his name?
We used to always ask where he was, just like Waldo in the kids' book.
Unfortunately, I don't have any hard information on that other than a coincidence of fires in a neighborhood that was feels devastated by the Airbnb phenomena.
Bob Thorpe is the secret name of our representative, Mike.
Thank you.
Were all those hotels destroyed, Mike?
No, I don't believe so. I believe the fire department saved whatever.
All right, so it's my turn.
So we want to talk about McSally.
Let's finish up. Yeah,
we want to talk about McSally's irrevocably tied to Trump and her difficulty with that. I'm talking now, I got to give credit to the Arizona Mirror, a guy named Jim Small. I'm stealing his material here. Listening to McSally try to dance on both sides of the issue. So many people believe her ties to Trump is what lost her the 2018 race. She is irrevocably tied to Trump. She defends him in private. She sort of tries to play neutral in public. If there's not reporters asking the questions, then she will say, well, this poor guy, he's under siege. I mean, how can he survive when he's attacked all the time? And in private, she will talk about that she's going to be a judge during the impeachment trial, and she has to try to remain some distance between them. And so there are, and I just want to say on the Look Back show that there is no distance between Martha McSally and Donald Trump, no matter how hard she tries to walk that line. They are tied. She has supported everything he's done. She supports him almost in every ridiculous foreign policy blunder that he has.
Her own party vote her in.
There you go.
Okay, Mike. That's great.
So welcome, Mark Kelly. And
yes.
Welcome,
Mark Kelly.
Yay, Mark Kelly.
Yeah.
Welcome two Democratic senators from Arizona. When Mark Kelly beats the snot out of Martha McSally, we'll have two Democratic senators. That's my prediction for 2020.
Great. I guess I don't have an even more sober take on thing, and I'll allude to something that both Klaus and Mike said. First, Trump was presented with a whole series of options, and in assassinating Iran's most popular general, it's very to look at it objectively, it's as if someone murdered or killed MacArthur at the height of his popularity, or Patton, or Rommel in Germany, when they were not before they begin to get discredited and questioned about it, but right at the height of his popularity, he killed him when he was not visibly actually doing stuff. And some of the things they're saying are weird. Generals are always planning attacks. So if a general is not planning attacks, he's not a general. That's all there is. It's the difference between planning attacks and planning to attack are two different things. Mm. In any case, Trump picked the most extreme response. So if someone had killed Montgomery in World War II, assassinated him, Trump's put the Iranians in a position where they have to respond. He's killed their most popular general, considered their best general, although there's some issue. We'll have to investigate further about how good this guy actually was and so forth. But the result is probably not going to damage Iran as much as it's going to, in the end, damage the United States.
That's the key, Steve, right there, is the cost benefit. This was a foolish and foolhardy. Regardless of whether the guy was a good guy or a bad guy, almost doesn't matter. Regardless of what he was planning, almost doesn't matter. This is going to cost us much more diplomatically, much more in American lives than we got.
We're forcing them.
This is another Trump deal. Well, he's going to lose.
He's forcing them into a position where they have to respond, and then he's threatening to destroy great cultural ancient monuments.
He's being the ultimate bully.
Yeah, he's ultimate, and it's childish. Look, he's being impeached. It looks like he probably will lose this next election. He needs a war or conflict to gain his popularity back. And in fact, a lot of the establishment news just bought right into this uncritically. There's a really good article in one of the things by Iglesias, I guess his name is. And what he says is, you know, be skeptical about these claims about America, because we've had, remember, the Iraqi war, Mike, you know, the claims of the
other war we lied our way into.
Yeah.
Yes.
And what he said he was skeptical about the criticism of going into that war because the weapons of mass control. He said, how would anybody charge that when as soon as you have the war, you find out whether there are or aren't? But they didn't. And you have to be very, very careful. You can't assume that they're telling the truth. Look at Pompeo. Look at Barr. Look at Trump. Look at the people who are paid to defend him. And you're going to find people who have no basis in telling the truth.
That's
no
right. Support I assume the they're truth. Lying. We're not telling the
so
truth.
So that wasn't what I was going to talk about. But as we, you know, we have a weekly show, Mike. So, you know, here we are. I wanted to say that I guess when I look at the election that's coming up, I think it's the most significant election we'll have. I hope that it goes well. When I look at Trump, I don't see, you know, I see this, you know, he has this talent, for example, hitting 52 Iranian sites that were the number of American hostages back 30 years ago. He has this instinct for publicity and putting things in a term.
He likes spectacle.
He likes spectacle. Mm. I guess I would say the prime task this next year, and looking back over this last year, is defeating Donald Trump.
Of course.
Almost Absolutely. Nothing else we do will matter nearly as much. Trump has to be defeated. We need presidential candidate, vice presidential candidates who can defeat him.
Well, let me ask you this. Does it have to be a moderate?
It doesn't have. I don't know whether it should be a moderate or a progressive.
Biden's moderate?
Biden's considered a moderate for sure.
Who's that? Biden, yeah. Right. I don't know who else.
Okay. So Biden's considered a moderate. I think if Biden had been extraordinarily good at debating and stuff, the race would be over. But he hasn't been. So we're still, I think the reason we're stalled out is people are looking for the strongest candidate. They don't like the progressives because they're too far to the left. A lot of people don't. The progressives don't like the moderates because they think, well, this will be more of the same. My point is, it really doesn't matter much whether it's a progressive or a moderate. The point is to defeat Trump. And the point is to defeat the Republicans at all levels of government. This has to be done. The Republican Party has gone off in a spiral of destructive, dishonest political things. This is not the Republican Party that we used to argue with when I was young. Right. This is something right. else. They're following this man down the rabbit hole of lies. They're following him down there. Now, this is a
well, that's lies. We're talking obstruction of justice. We're complete denial of the rule of law. The Constitution has, whether for 240 years, has been the rule of law. And we're talking about he breaks the rule of law every day. Every day he's in office, we are in constitutional denial.
And we can debate whether he is so down the – there's a scale of sociopathy that he's so far down the scale that he doesn't even know there's a law there. Or he's so centered.
He doesn't care.
Or he's so centered he doesn't care. Well, we're debating. And
he never was political. He some people don't even know this, Trump has actually given more money to the Democratic Party than the Republican Party in his lifetime.
Right. That's the process of buying.
I mean, it has. The point I'm making is that he just doesn't care. He doesn't care about party. He just wants to win. He just wants to make more money.
And the psychologists are debating
right.
about whether he's a sociopath or a narcissistic personality disorder or whether he's a borderline personality. We can have all kinds of opinions. The point is that he is a extraordinarily destructive machine, not only to the American government, our foreign policy and our foreign service, but to our entire culture. He's a destructive force to the entire culture. He's breaking down the unwritten rules of civility and honesty that were great to start with, but were better. So my time's up. Who wants to go? Mike, you want to? You want to keep up with this topic?
Just want to say Congress, from here on out, must change the Constitution, change the laws of the United States to provide penalties, to provide severe penalties for the kinds. And that we have this, what Alan Wolfe, political professor from Boston University, calls a gentleman's agreement, called the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, what has been the guiding document of this nation for all since its existence.
And let's remind folks that the Constitution is a very short document. It's an outline. It doesn't have the filled-in details that Mike's talking about,
and certainly
which are the unwritten rules of how the Constitution worked that have developed over hundreds of years.
The Founding Fathers would have expected us by now to have written in some punishment, some cost, some consequence for the obstruction of justice and for ignoring the rule of its law.
Right, the whole point is to protect our democracy.
Well, the Constitution is very difficult to change. As you know, it takes 3/4 of Congress and 3/4 of the states. The Equal Rights Amendment, which should be non-controversial, finally may pass more than a decade later, as Arizona hopefully goes blue. There's another aspect to the Trump election. I don't see how he can be elected, because what people forget is that his margins of victory in the swing states were very narrow. And I don't think he's made any additional friends.
He can't win a fair election. He can't win a fair election in the United States. But the election
isn't fair. We move further and further. Exactly.
I still want to be hopeful, though. I still want to be hopeful. And I believe that when we get more people to vote, we always swing Democrat.
Gary, we're running out of time, and let's give you a word in here, because we can't see you. So what is your take on all of this?
Yeah. Well, two things. One is, I believe the Constitution provides plenty of options to control Trump. The problem is that Congress has over many years given away or abdicated its responsibilities. And now you have one house of Congress that's controlled by equally bad lunatics as the man in the White House. So I don't think that it needs to be changed. I just think Congress needs to take back its authority. It's Article 1. The president's Article 2.
That's a debate we should probably have, Gary. You know, between you and Mike on whether we should change the Constitution or enforce it. I mean, I think there's a lot of approaches. There's a lot to be discussed. Mike, you want to sum up? Maybe do the close yet, but just sort of sum up. For 8 years now, almost, we've been trying to
it's time for close.
Speak the truth in politics.
Yes, well, and please tune in to Democratic Perspective, or if not, listen to our a podcast on VBID.org and get all the truth you can stand. We'll be here for the next 8 years, folks. VBID.org has our podcasts, and we're right here. Thank you.
been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and our nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 a.m. news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.